Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Now for part two of our very special long play podcast with a New Game Plus.
Hello, beautiful Princess Sonia. It's me, Mario. Woohoo! You're number one. Woohoo! Hello to all of my friends on a sci-fi and screen. On Joy 94.9. Number one. Woohoo!
I saw so many female Dr. Matt Smiths.
Yeah.
Did you see those?
With the fezzes and the... Yeah.
It was hilarious. Sorry.
Well, no. Look, they've got the whole country thing going on there because they know that the only people interested in their product are old people who don't know any better. You know, they're going for the flannel shirts with the brown shoes and the brown pants.
It's
and
very odd.
Very Deniliquin. You
don't know. Yeah. Who's doing their marketing? Maybe they should rethink that. But speaking of marketing, actually, that might be a good point. Who does have the overall say for how New Game Plus looks?
I get executive say in everything. Like, anything that happens comes through me. But at the same time, I have people I trust who I'm happy to make. You know, a lot of our graphics and stuff for the show, Prospect makes, and they're all great. Like, they're all awesome. And he made one for the new segment they've got. And by the time this releases, I'm pretty sure they'll have the first one online. They're making one about Magic the Gathering. And they called it Planeswalkers Plus. And he made this awesome thing where it's like a deck of cards sits in the thing and it folds, it throws out. And like, one's New Game Plus, one's Alice who's hosting it, one's the name of the show, one's, and it looks really cool.
How long does that take to do?
Not as long as you'd think, because he's good at what he does. Like, and if he's given the time to sit down and be creative, he's great. And that's the hard part, but it's just finding that time. And that's what gets us. As far as, you know, marketing, t-shirts, that kind of stuff, which is where we're moved finally at that position now. I mean, I've seen tiny sites have people buy their t-shirts. I'm like, well, I know a lot of people would love to help rep us. And so we're at that point where we're like, we're going to get some t-shirts and hopefully do that kind of stuff. But I didn't want it to be a basic, you know, it's always good to have one with just a logo or just a basic one that people can wear, but I really want it to be different. Our special edition one for this year is really cool. Like, I'm really looking forward to people's reaction to that and seeing if people get on board and buy it in big, because, you know, we'll charge a little bit more for it, but we won't go stupid, and we'll actually be embroidering them individually as well, so you'll get your name put on it and stuff like that.
We'll be signing them.
Oh, you know, it's funny because I get it. I was at Supernova. I was doing a favor for the ESL, the esports guys there, on behalf of BenQ. I had to drop some stuff off for them. They called me up and said, can you give me a hand? I'm like, yeah, all right, no problem. Went down, they dropped this stuff off. I walked in, my arms full of monitors, and I walked up to one of the guys at Supernova putting the booth together. I said, hey man, like, can you tell me where the desk is? He goes, oh, you're the guy from TV, aren't you? I'm like, I am, and I would love to talk, but these fucking monitors are heavy. Like, you need to, like, he ended up directing me, and I felt a little bit bad. And then just Jamie shaking his head at me, I'm like, what? It happens more often than you think, and we've been doing this long enough that people think. And, you know, it's amazing seeing the guys have it happen for the first time. Brad had it happen in Japan, where a British guy walked up to him out of the blue and said, hey, you do that at Australian TV show? He's like, yes. He goes, yeah, keep up the good work. And freaking
out. Cool.
Yeah. And we had that in America and stuff. And yeah, it's been good. So yeah, it's, you know, we're not signing autographs left, right, and center just yet, but it has happened. And
$40 a pop.
Wow.
Right.
We're gonna booth set that up. And so it's all in good fun. And we're always up for a chat as well. Like, people come up and talk to us all the time. And I'm happy to give them time if I got it.
Now, because I am ignorant about a lot of things, particularly video games, tell us where you got that image from, the symbol of New Game Plus.
Ah, this is a story for you.
Yeah, we went through so much kind of back and forth about it, what font do we want, what this, what that. But the symbol we pretty much decided on straight away.
Because it's a plus.
Because it's a plus. Plus. Yeah. And it's simple and it works in that the way we originally, and it does, actually it does it now, doesn't it? Because it's the double lined cross, so there's the gap in the middle.
Yep.
The way that it, because it can fold out into a square. So we were going to do that to go like boom to our like banners when it's like introducing someone and then it folds back up in the thing and it goes. And now it does that. So that was originally the idea behind it. It was never anything more than it worked for the idea of having it in a title. And then it just kind of became the symbol that identifies us.
It's very dimensional now. It's got that real solid... It's changed, I've noticed.
Yeah, it started off like even the thing, he keeps playing with it in a little bit. And that's where we'll keep evolving it over time and stuff like that. We'll never change it. People still identify the symbol, but we'll definitely be tweaking it over time to match what purpose it's being used for. Like originally that was just for TV titles, but expanding on beyond that, there's plenty of other stuff we can do with it, I think. So,
and you're saying 100,000 people?
It's usually about that number, depends on that's the show. Amazing. Yeah, we get between 70 and 100. That's including all our TV. We're on Easy TV, which is the torrent site, online, which is a legal torrent, so you can download it there without fear of repercussions. We're on Pirate Bay now, same
Yay,
deal. Yeah,
Pirate Bay, that sounds promising.
Yeah.
Look, we're legit now.
And Mini Nova and stuff, like all of the big torrent sites that people know of. And honestly, that's been one of our, it was our webmaster who suggested it, and at the start I was kind of like, very keen to put it up there. Yeah,
because the thing is, you can almost argue that there is a lot of our audience who hangs around those kind of sites. Gamers are tech savvy.
And they're in Australia watching television, which
and
means
they're inside
that they,
a lot. Yeah. So, well, they don't have to be now because they can have these giant phones.
That's very true. But yeah, and so that was a real boon for us. And he put us on the front page for like 9 months. So for every bit of traffic that went through,
had to go through
had to see us. Like so you go to the categories, and there was New Game Plus. So we got so many people. Like Breakdown of Fans is Australia first, obviously. USA, fair few. Canada's pretty popular. The UK and it's Denmark. Because it's all like the countries that get their TV through Easy TV. So a lot of our international fans did it that way.
Because of Easy TV.
Yeah, and probably after that, like, you know, Pakistan, places like that, we get a lot of feedback from. And it's been great, like, just watching these people communicate to us. We miss an episode and we don't get, where's our episode? We get, hey guys, is something wrong? Blah, blah, blah. And so amongst all of our viewings, like, it's great that, you know, we get these people watching and so many people on the website.
And they notice if you're not there.
Yeah.
They feel they're comfortable enough to engage us directly and say, hey, is there a problem with the episode? Yeah, it's all sorted. We'll have it up tomorrow. Oh, great. You know, so we're looking at the next step for us is probably, we're looking at going onto TV into Europe. Like, that's probably where I want to be next up. So
Eurovision
maybe we can set up a little like Banana Republic there and go for it. So
there's already some there, I'm sure. A host.
It wouldn't be expensive.
Talked about the past, where you're at, how it came about, and the people that you have involved in this amazing vehicle of New Game Plus. And you just mentioned some of the future. You're looking at Europe and television. You mean web, obviously web television.
That too,
and
a lot of their smart TV stuff, which is much bigger concentrations over there.
Yeah.
We're looking at that. Bit of
America. It's going to drive you crazy here, knowing that we're like, why aren't we?
Yeah, and that's it for us. So many web portals exist outside. I mean, America's got a good... go to Japan. Japan's amazing for that kind of stuff. Like, it'd be a big boon for us if we had someone who could actually speak the language. But there's so many ways to ingest media there compared to here. You know, Australia, it's TV only because, you know, Rupert Murdoch owns most of the TV network. So you have to... between Rupert and Gina, you have to... Everything has to go through them, and it's kind of like, well... Yeah, it's a bit unfortunate. The internet's been a great boon for us, and so many, like, thousands of people watching has been really positive. And so we just want to build on that. We want to really engage worldwide. You know, like a friend of mine, when discussing it, said, think scalability. Think anything you do, if you could reach a global audience with it, do that. Do you know what I mean? Like, reach as many people as you can, because that means that when it comes time to kind of reap the benefits of, you know, say you guys travel to Germany for a convention or something like that, you can have a meet up there. Do you know what I mean? Like, get those people involved. You can do all that kind of stuff and go from there. But I mean, yeah, we know that our home is Melbourne, and we do a lot of stuff here just because geographically it's easiest. You know,
you wouldn't move. You don't need to.
I wouldn't.
You've got to be in Sydney.
One of the classic lines from games industry was, "Yeah, you've got to be in Sydney to be in the games industry." And I can understand their point, but Yeah, screw Sydney. Like
that's only like an 8-hour drive.
Yeah, well, we don't live in that world anymore. Like it's very much a case of, you know, we get invites to these events just as well as anyone, you know. So it's good, and I mean it's a little bit of a cabal up in Sydney anyway, and I'm not really too keen on being another one, so it's fine with me.
I guess the thing is it shouldn't have to be geographical. Exactly. Sort of,
well, with the advent of the internet, that's why we've kind of looked to embrace the internet, like look towards, you know, focusing on the internet as our big kind of channel, because, you know, the internet's so, well, almost so good nowadays, and the main way that, you know, we interact with our fans, that it makes sense. It's silly not to do it.
Yeah, the obvious, isn't it?
Yeah, well, as far as the publisher side goes, Sydney is the place. All the publishers are based in Sydney, bar what, Nintendo?
And why is that?
It's just when they start.
Sydney's the business capital.
Yeah, it always has been. When
it's
they
been
do
that international hub. Yeah. For
it
some is. Time
it
now.
Always has been. But that said,
plus the work culture up there.
That too. Yeah, no one wants to work, and I can understand. You walk outside anywhere, and it's like a postcard view. I can understand why no one wants to do any work. But yeah, in Melbourne, we have the dev scene. Like, we are probably one of the biggest independent dev scenes in the world. Absolutely. And there's some amazing stuff coming out of our guys. And the best thing for us is it's great for content, because whenever we get a local dev, it's like, oh, would you like to interview us or review our game? No problem, buddy, because it's just around the corner. We'll meet you at someone's offices and we'll go from there. You know, and it's so for us, it works really, really well that we don't have to send them email correspondence. It's pretty much give them a call. Hey, you're free for that interview on Thursday? Yeah, no problem. Head down there, done. Yeah. And so for us, for content wise and driving that kind of dev community, it's great. As far as the international stuff goes, well, we still go to Sydney when we have to, but the new wave is coming. Like there's a bit of a change in the air, and it's been good to have that kind of access to them.
Well, one word: PAX.
PAX is going to be interesting. Yeah, American convention in Australia,
and one of the arguably one of the biggest kind of community driven or community focused gaming conventions
between
in the world.
Between that and probably Rooster Teeth Expo, and Rooster Teeth guys got a lot of time for, and PAX guys I do too, to be fair. But it's really community driven. But I mean, America, you've done enough Australian cons to know that, you know, they don't have an official cosplay contest. So I'm just going to let that sink in. In Australia, you're not going to have an official cosplay contest.
They've never had an official cosplay PAX.
If there's ever a country that's going to embrace...
I'm surprised.
Yeah, well, if there's ever a country that's going to embrace cosplay in a huge way, I mean, it's Australia. You know,
Japan, I would say.
Yeah, and it really is that kind of that audience here. And it's interesting to see them not do that. I don't know.
So why do you think they're not doing it? I mean, they don't...
They haven't done it in the past. It's kind of...
They've never done it in the past because cosplay particularly as a word has its heavy connotations with anime.
Yeah.
And PAX has always been very focused on video games. In fact, they almost basically ban any kind of anime from being at PAX because it's all about video games.
Yeah.
So that's why it's never really taken off in the past. But because we have such a strong community here, we've been pushing pretty hard. It's like, well, there's going to be cosplayers there anyway. You might as well, you know, legitimize, because that will actually build your audience. You know,
people will turn up. And to me, it blurs anyway.
Because you can set rules as well. Like Manifest, Melbourne's anime festival, if you want to enter their cosplay competition, by rules, you have to be in an anime-specific cosplay. You cannot be... Japanese video game is a grey area and is generally accepted now, but I remember the old days. Not an anime, not a manga, not included.
Yeah. And look, this thing, I think otherwise it should do well. It's going to get pretty busy. Like they're going to probably have at least Supernova crowds, I'd reckon, at least for the first one. You know, and hopefully they can build
it
from there.
It's the tickets have sold.
They have, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's going to be like a surprise.
Release some more.
I have no inside information on that before anyone sends me like allegations of libel and slander, but I guarantee you there's some tucked away in the hole that they're just going to pop out.
Well, I do hope so.
Well, it's a showground. There's so many buildings that they could just rent on an extra.
Exactly.
And so I wouldn't be surprised if it's coming. It wouldn't shock me in the slightest.
It's pretty exciting though for Penny Arcade to be here, and
it's exciting for it to be Melbourne as well. I think that's another nice thing again.
I thought it would be Brisbane or Sydney.
Brisbane was EBX's first because EB's headquarters are in Brisbane,
it was
on the Gold Coast. But it was strange for not Sydney. That was the biggest surprise.
EBX is now Sydney.
Is now in Sydney,
and they own it now. And I think if EBX had have stayed at the Gold Coast, PAX would have probably gone to Sydney, and it's just because they didn't want, obviously, to compete in a market that already exists. Yep. And the Melbourne Showgrounds are a pretty good facility. I mean, that's the Sydney Showgrounds at Homebush, isn't it? Now, technically,
I don't remember.
Oh, Olympic Park, but Olympic Park isn't a horrible venue. It's just a pain to get to.
It's just in the middle of nowhere.
You catch the wrong bus, you end up Lord knows where. which actually happened to me and Drew one time when we were there. But I think, yeah, Melbourne has that community. They also, do you know how they decided on Australia?
No idea.
They went into which, so they backtracked and said which of the countries that people like hail from have embraced PAX, you know, have they bought our shirts and contributed on our forums. Per capita, Australia was
really
absolute. We are a very vocal minority in gaming. We're only 5% of all seven. I think it's 7% now. When we started, we were 3% of the international gaming audience. We're up to like 5 and 7% now. So that's
huge, actually.
Well, yeah, for our little backwater colony of, you know, 23 million people, but we are so vocal. Like, we are that real vocal minority. People, if it doesn't get localized for Australia, you'll hear about it. You'll hear it. Like, if a game doesn't get brought out here, and Rooster Teeth was the other one, and they were really surprised at how much of their merchandise and things were being purchased by Australia. And so much so that they visit every Supernova, every Armageddon, like Hunterby, the supplier, bring them out for that reason, because there's so many people here who really want to see them. PAX found that the same, that of all countries in the world that really embraces their product, it was Australia. And so they said, well, this is the first one. And, you know, we've got that history of, we there's a gap in the market, definitely in Melbourne for a gaming convention.
Well, there's a gap in Australia, really. Once we lost eGames, because eGames was really the only, oh, I guess you could say, more independent, considering the EBX is run by EB Games. Yeah. You know, so we just don't have a gaming convention like a Supernova, where it's just run by an interested party, not and by an actual company.
And invites other, including other groups. Done.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, and this is the other thing with it, is exactly, I mean, EBX is effectively...
It's a trade show.
Yeah, they're appealing to their market. They know that they're
it's their
sell
trade show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You can't buy anything else except EB merchandise from there, I believe.
And pre-order games.
And pre-order games and stuff, yeah.
But there's no other vendors, whereas there's vendors at PAX, but I don't even think they can sell stuff, can they?
I think they can, but again, I think there's a lot of restrictions.
I think there's a specific vendor hall, but yeah, if you're like there for a promotional store, you can't sell stuff at your promotional store. It's really weird.
You
like,
can promote it, but you can't...
You can't actually sell products.
Sell the products. Is it similar to... Oh, I can't remember the name of the one. There's an independent game one in North America and Canada, I think it was... It's very big in Toronto or something, and you can't. Yeah, you can't sell your game. You're just promoting it. It's like a very long trailer.
Yes,
and people significantly sign on to receive more information later. Or something.
That's kind of like an E3, really.
Yeah, yeah.
E3, that's the independent game, so it's a bit. You know, it's not mainstream as such. Mm. Not as big mainstream, although. Independent games
that's gonna keep getting that way. Like, I think
it'd be great to see something like that here.
Yeah, and we have a couple of things. We have Free Play, which is kind of ish. There's a couple around, but you know, I don't think Free Play kind of fills that gap. And I know there's some really interesting people, interesting devs that I know who are looking at trying to make some event like that happen.
That would be wonderful.
And I think if they got it down to a fine art to do it, but I mean, it's so hard. Australians, this is the hard part with PAX coming over. Australians are the notorious tall poppy syndrome sufferers. So if you fail in any way, they will make you remember it for the rest of your life. And even if you didn't fail, they'll make you feel like you failed. And that's the problem a lot of developers out here face is, just some snarky, smug comment. It's like, how does that help? Can you do any better? Like, should you really be running your mouth at this point? But we'll still do it. Yeah, and people think that's limited to just, you know, the average Australian bogan and stuff like that, but it's not. It's every facet. We ingrain it into our kids early.
I think it shows even when you see that, you know, excuse me, no offense to any Americans that might be listening to this, but when you have an American winning Best Young Talent on the National Television Media Awards show on that channel, you've got to wonder what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't feel good enough about our own local talent.
And this is the thing.
And I think it runs across everything. Oh, it actually feels quite restrictive because, I mean, I'm from New Zealand and we just don't care. We'll just do it anyway.
And we poach.
We don't expect the rest of the world to give a damn, but we'll do it anyway.
How many New Zealanders have we poached? Let's go through the list. Sam Neill, Russell Crowe.
No, you can have him.
Wow. And it's always funny. It's always funny how quickly that, you know, we'll say, oh yeah, Australia's own.
Claim it.
They lived here for a year. Oh, yeah, no, he was Belgian.
No, Kimbra, though, is.
Kimbra is, yeah. I mean, old mate Mel Gibson is, yeah, he's American.
He's American.
Yeah.
Isn't he?
Yeah. He lived out here for.
Actually, so is Nicole Kidman, when you think, technically.
Yeah, and it's so many of our. And this is the thing, yeah, if we really want to go on the industry side, it's all the same families producing the same crappy talent, like that aren't as talented as their parents. And it goes back to the bad old days of, you know, like, even our music. Like, we used to make. Go, Shannon. There's been a couple of really good Australian bands and stuff lately, but for kind of 10 years there, we were just producing the same crap as everyone else, and it was just getting lost.
But that's because people say that Angus and Julia Stone were better than Birds of Tokyo, and I will never let that go. I will never let that go. That was it for me. I'm like, you're done.
It seems like radio station. You know, trying to replicate something from overseas, and it's not necessary.
Yeah,
because. You want that authenticity. You want people to say, that's very Australian, and you notice the differences between the different cultures. I think that's wonderful.
Absolutely. You know? And I think that's
We should do that.
Yeah.
And what the hell? Who cares what people think?
Well, that's why Crowded House and Paul Kelly and all those things worked, because they were Australian, or they were new. You know, they incorporated that kind of, that shared kind of, you know, spirit that we had, and now it's kind of gone. It's like Delta looks like every other pop star, and Ricky Lee dropped about 15 kilos and now looks worse for it. I don't understand. Really? She looked great before. Yeah, she was great before.
It's
just the nature of what it is. I mean, I'm going back to the old days of, you know, I love the Skyhooks and all those kind of old Aussie bands and stuff like that. And it's the same with gaming. It really is. Like, we've had so many studios close down. We've had so much, like, so many good people go overseas. The head of Media Molecule, and I her name just.
It's like Siobhan.
Siobhan. Yeah. She left over there years ago. She got out of Dodge. I mean, I know someone who works for Sony Computer Entertainment America, and he used to work at was it Tantalus out here, one of the store studios there. But to get his name, he had to go overseas.
That's sad.
And that's like everything. It's like, but with mobile devs and independent devs, it's a different story, because you don't need that geographical.
And you also don't need the huge injection of money either. Well, you need money, but not the kind of. Tens, hundreds of millions that you need for AAA development.
They reckon that Bioshock Infinite, the biggest recent game that I think everyone should really play, because it's really, really good, but aside from doing the review of it, they say it costs between 100 and 200 million to create. So they have to sell 8 million copies to make their money back. And they will. They'll sell 8 million. Yep. Like, no problem. But that's a lot of copies. I mean, I remember the days when people were happy if you played the game and you sold 1 million and you were a raving success, you know? Like, the highest selling game of all time is still Mario, I think. Or Mario or Tetris. It's got to be one of them.
I'm not sure.
But that's into, like, 40 million. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the ceiling on it. And
that was, like, that was a high selling. I think it's been eclipsed by some of the CODs and Halos.
I've never got near them. Never got near them. 12, 15, no,
something's eclipsed them, but I can't remember its name.
See, that's the thing with the industry and the portable. You were talking about the dev and those sort of games. I think I read somewhere in research somewhere. I did my homework. If I can remember my homework now. It's all mixed up with other games. Antiviral and the movie lamp going out the other night at that place, that cinema. Anyway, I won't talk about that. Sitting in the dark, not seeing the movie come to review. But I'm just hearing the audio. But yeah, I won't go on about that. No, it was a research show. I think 47%. Of the people that play those games are women, actually, and they're on their way to work, or they're, you know, in transit somewhere, and it's just convenience, it's on their phone. You know, it lasts for 5, 8, 10 minutes max.
Bite-sized gaming is a thing of the moment, because I read it as well in another article. They pointed out that you can't really get on a train or a tram or a bus anymore and look around and not see people's eyes down staring at a phone or headphones in. You know,
It's funny, coming from, you know, the more traditional gaming sense. Like, I've always been the traditional gamer. Like, when being a nerd was not something that got you Instagram photos. You know what I mean? Like, it was, you had to fight for the cred. And the problem is, a lot of people are seeing it from that point of view, where it's, because I like these quote unquote hardcore, and I hate using the term hardcore, but
these
traditional games, games. It's like, well, there's no. The thing you've got to understand is the market is shifting. There'll always be room for those traditional games. It just doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be as big as it once was, because the means to access them is so much different. And it doesn't mean it's good or bad. It just means it's different, you know. And until we figure out what's going on, I don't think it's easy to just say, oh, gaming's dead. It's like, well, it's not that simple. Nothing's that simple. So,
No. I was in a friend's house not so long ago, and she had behind some Perspex, some retro gaming consoles. consoles and all this sort of stuff. It was kind of nostalgic, even for me.
Yeah,
who doesn't know anything. But well, I was like, oh, I got goosebumps when I saw an old Nintendo. I was like, oh.
Well, it's you know, funny, yeah.
It's still there. I don't think that's going to ever disappear.
And if anything, it's gotten the more chic now. Like, the amount of times you see pretty girls on, like, Instagram wrapping cords around themselves. Like,
what are you doing in your spare time?
No,
I thought you didn't have any spare time.
Yeah, that's true. I was on this site the other day, and it was for the, I think it was a Facebook page, like a fan page for the Super Nintendo. Right? And I was like, Super NES, anyone? And it was this pretty, I think she was an Italian girl, like an Italian hand. And she's got this, like, the cord, and she's there, and the Super NES is in front of her, and she's got all these games laying around. It's like, I don't understand what the point of this whole photo is.
Do you think? All right, no, I think we'll head to the S word if we've got a bit of time.
Yeah.
Sex and games, sexism. What's going on there? I mean, you guys would know a lot of the changes and things that go on there.
I think the hard part to get across is, yeah, there's some dumb things going on with gaming. I just worry that sometimes the message gets lost in the delivery. Like, people are really hammering the point home. It's like, we get it, we're trying to fix it, but the more we get our attention drawn to these small, like, and things that, Twitter's the worst, and this is why we don't like Twitter. There's so many controversies we see, and it's like, but do your homework on it. There's actually nothing to this. You've really just caused this whole grand scheme for nothing. And then something really bad happens, like some real misogynistic, like, crap happens, and nobody listens anymore because we've wasted people's
rage.
The boy who cried wolf. You know, and it's like with any topic, you know, people, it's like, fight your battles, like, pick your battles and really make them count, because you're going to have to. And I think the thing with, particularly girls in gaming, is everyone's like, oh, you know, you shouldn't discriminate for someone being a girl gamer. Like, well, you just discriminated by calling them a girl gamer. To me, they're just someone who plays games. I don't care what they are. You know, man, woman, black, white, gay, straight, who cares? I just play games. I just want to play Xbox. I don't care about anything else. And when I say I don't care, it's not that I don't care that bad things are happening. I just don't view them as anything but someone who's playing games with me on Xbox. You know what I mean? Like, that's my viewpoint. And I know that I'm not necessarily that I'm alone on that, but I'm maybe in the minority on that. But I don't even think a lot of the bad things people say is necessarily based on the fact that they hate someone for a specific thing. It's just, that's what's different about you, and I'll pick on what's different about you. And that's what a lot of that whole bullshit comes from. It's like, whatever's different about you, that's what I'm going to nail you on, no matter what. And it could be whatever's different. It could be the fact that, you know, you're older than them. It could be the fact that but it just happens to be the girls are easy targets because it's in the media. You know, it's like anything. It's
something that is always going to be a red flag and attention to it.
It's like the Bogan attacks on the trains. Like, every, you know, then they're bringing this whole thing up. Are Australians racist? I don't think it's that simple. It's just most people tend not to do it on trains in public, and because now they've got an audience, they're going to keep doing it. There's going to be a big wave of it. Because
watch out, someone will have a camera somewhere,
and
that's, you know?
Oh, mate, did you see when I told that bloody rat to think? And it's like, you've given them a platform now. Yeah, and that's the hard part. You've got to battle is, you've got to have this kind of thing between awareness and giving someone who really does believe that the platform they need to.
Because I was waiting in line for an interview at the Supernova convention. Of course, we were all there at different times during that weekend, last weekend, and there was a guy there waiting as well, and he was just making these random sort of comments about, oh, look at that girl. I mean, really, the girls that come here, I mean, look at the way they dress. Look at the way they dress. And it was the way he said it. Look at the way. And I said, she looks beautiful. I think she looks beautiful. What's wrong with the way she dresses? Because cosplayers get a lot of flack. And then, of course, you know, video games as well has that, you know, stigma that can occur. And what do you think? I mean, Kirsty, you're a cosplayer from...
It is hard because obviously the biggest issue we face as cosplayers is that female representation games is pretty static. It's usually not much clothes, really. The problem is if you want to cosplay, they're usually quite skimpy. They're usually quite big-breasted. Busty. Yeah, so
someone should be selling those inflatable busty things.
I've used water balloons in the past to be Tifa from Final Fantasy VII, who had comically large breasts.
They weren't chicken fillets.
No. They were water balloons, and then they were stolen by one of my stalkers, which was pretty funny. And That's another podcast.
Convention culture. Yeah. Be here for hours.
So it is the hard thing, you know, being someone who wants to dress up as a video game character, the choice is pretty limited. Again, also being someone who's not white and trying to pick a video game character who is also not white also limits my choice even further.
And you can play that card from the other way of like, so there's so many great anime game characters I'd love to cosplay, but I'm also not like a short Asian dude, so I've got to be realistic in my picks. You know, I'm
could be an octopus.
I could try. Yeah, you never know. But yeah, like it's really hard to find something because you've either got to play it up or you've got to.
But the thing is, why can't people do that? Because I mean, I've got some friends in the US. We've done podcasts back and forth with them, Black Tribbles in Philadelphia, and they dress as Batman, and another one dresses as Superman, and they're African American, so obviously black.
Yeah. I mean, there's no judgment.
The odd hassle, but it's changing. It is getting much
possible. Yeah, I mean, there's no limit. Like, that. The thing is, like, as someone who's been in the cosplay community, I can assure you that there's no judgment on race. It doesn't matter if you're being, you know, if you are a person of colour and you're dressing up as a white character, who cares? It's out of your control. Yeah. You can do whatever you want, you know? It's exactly. The quality of your costume and the way you act and the way you've pulled off that costume that counts. It's not your skin colour at all.
That's more of it. And I mean, if you match the way somebody looks in the way, like, oh, that character looks similar to X, then nail it. Like, really try and look like him. But if you're not, have fun with it. Be Black Batman. Like, who cares? You know what I mean? Like,
it looks great.
How much of his skin is shown anyway? It's like his chin, isn't it?
I think the big thing with cosplay, again, if I can catch on, the new Tomb Raider was really good for that because she wasn't like crazy boob like she used to be in the old days.
And she was wearing pants.
She was one of the better video game characters as well of recent memory. But I think the big thing is people, you know, the old joke is, you know, oh, she's just dressing up like to get boys' attention. Number one, don't be so full of yourself. And number two, even if she was, if you were in that position, if you were a man who was so good looking that everybody wanted to look at you, I've never met a guy who would not take advantage of that situation. So I hate that argument that because pretty girls are dressing up as something and people are paying attention to them, that
it's a confidence thing. It's like, we don't want people to be confident and be happy with what they want to portray.
And it's also been insulting to men, like the whole argument that, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. You can always look. There's nothing to stop you from looking.
Yeah, there's nothing Ichigo, Goku.
And there's a level of point where you go, oh, that's cool. Oh, she's very pretty or whatever. You just let it go. I mean, like, it's so insulting that the idea that, oh, we're going to see a pretty girl, so that means we're going to just drive us wild and we have to act and we have to do this. Like, as somebody who's not an idiot, I find that very insulting, the idea that I'm going to see someone's boobs and that's it. I have to hold her down and do things to her. It's like, so fucking what? Like, you know, everyone's, you know, I don't know.
But in video games, how do you find, you know, generally response, I guess, to some of the arguments about how women are depicted?
It's an argument that obviously has come up a lot, and my response to it is, it's not just women who are hypersexualized, the men are hypersexualized as well. So think about some of the lead males of games like, say, Gears of War, where the men are just basically bursting with muscle. Yeah. Same with any fighting game, which is usually the one where women are like, oh, look at the women in fighting games. Like, have you seen the men in fighting games as well? Yeah, that's pretty unattainable as well. You know, there is a balance there. So I think it's just, you know, games are an extreme thing. So it's about these extreme situations generally. It's about, you know, extreme actions, and it's about extreme character depictions. So they're usually the really hardcore macho men, the really powerless females, or conversely, the really strong females. So I think it, and it's the same in our popular media as well. I mean, look at that gap. You know, these actresses now are hitting their 40s, can't get work because there is nothing nothing in TV or films for women in their 40s and 50s. So it's just, that's the way video games is interpreting it. It's just the women are hypersexualized. But I have seen a change. I mean, obviously, Tomb Raider, as Jason brought up, was a recent game with a female protagonist who wasn't over-sexualized, who had an interesting backstory.
And she was strong without because
she didn't need a man.
So many people resort to the old tragic event, you know, like traumatic event, be it rape or be it something like that, to say, now you've got character development. And there was real worries when Tomb Raider came out because the developer said that really stupid line. Mm-hmm. You play the game and it's completely different. Like, she really does grow on you. You see her and she's cowering and she's this young 20-year-old like human being. Like, she's just this real vulnerable person shaking in the cold, real first like outdoor experience by herself in the middle of nowhere with all these crazy people trying to kill her. But then you watch her grow into this kind of, you know, she has to get it done. She's got this will to save her friends and to do all this kind of stuff, and she just becomes strong from it. It's like, it's great, it's good to see. You know, she joins the few other ones, the Jades and the Alex Freeman, but even Alex, what's her name? Oh, the from Half-Life 2. Anyway, I keep forgetting his surname. Alex Gordon, maybe. I don't know. Someone on the internet will correct me.
Yeah.
Yeah, these really strong characters. But as you say, and that was my thing with Injustice, was like, I looked at it and I'm like, you know, Wonder Woman's this real kind of clingy, you know, we'll just get out of here, Bruce, we can escape. And it's like,
that's not what she would have been doing. No. Like, Wonder Woman's meant to kind of stand up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, no, no. It's and Catwoman. My bad.
Catwoman.
But like,
I'm thinking bondage when I think Wonder Woman, because that's the original. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, by the end of it, by the end of it, she's actually pretty good. Like, she's like, you know, one of the scenes later on really depicts her as, you know, no, this is nonsense. I'm taking a stand. You know, where at first she was a little bit more accepting. But, yeah, it normally shrugs it off. And it was just, it wasn't, you could tell there was no malice. It was just an unfortunate depiction. You know, it wasn't like they were really trying to push home the point of you girls don't know anything.
Well, it's the testing. They just fell down on the testing before they rolled it out. Yeah. I mean,
it's one of those things that's going to take time. Like 20 years ago, the people, the girls, there was no women working in gaming generally. You know, and the few who are, I mean, the I keep thinking Siobhan, who runs, I think it's Siobhan. If she's listening, I apologize. Who runs Media Molecule? Annie Hedwig, who works in Sony. All these who were into it early are now in these top roles, and they had the big Sony conference about 2 months ago, and there's this whole thing of there were no women on stage presenting. It's like, no, but like if they weren't there to be in those roles, like in 20 years time, now that we have this great industry of devs of women coming into the industry, in 10 years time we're going to have those people in those positions because they'll have earned it. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're not going to be figureheads. They're not going to be thrown out as a look, we have women who work here too, don't have a go at us. I think that's where it's headed. I think it will all grow in time, but it's going to take time.
And that's the end of part two with New Game Plus and our long play special podcast. More to come.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.